It might be cold out, but you're already thinking about this spring. And not spring break, but spring tillage and even spring planting. Planting season is going to be here before you know it, so now is the time to get your planter ready to plant. If you want to take advantage of the latest in planter technology, you can through a performance upgrade from John Deere. You'll take your current planter with older Max Emerge row units and replace the row units with Exact Emerge, which means you'll get all the benefits and advantages of Exact Emerge, like planting at 10 miles per hour while getting precise seed placement and uniform emergence at a fraction of the price of a new planter. Upgrading your planter starts with a conversation with your local John Deere dealer, so give them a call or visit johndeere.com.
Yes, we've got tuning, and it's always going to be there, and we'll always continue to innovate and bring out the new products, but I need to look at the next 20 years, not just the next 5 right. or 10. I need to know what does everyone need in 20 years' time and start delivering that for them now.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Welcome back to the Farm for Profit podcast. Tanner and Corey hanging out here down in Louisville.
Louisville.
I still can't get that right.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No, that's right. That's right.
But people don't say Des Moines either.
No. Third show in a row coming from the National Farm Machinery Show. Listeners, we're going to have quite a few of these because we had some fantastic opportunities down here to, one, get some educational material, and, two, to talk to some really cool people in agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you just have to put up with it, but
I promise they're going to be good.
Yeah, it's all quality, and there's no better place to get so many people in person. And in person, like, virtual's great. It is, yep. Because we can talk to a lot of people. In person is so much better.
Absolutely, and you can see that when you watch us on YouTube. So make sure you head over there and hit subscribe. We appreciate that. If you've got a guest suggestion or something to make our YouTube channel better, send us an email, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. But we're powering that YouTube channel with our partner today. Let's listen in.
Hey, Corey, it's time to recognize our partner, Sukup Manufacturing, celebrating 60 years in the grain bin and grain handling manufacturing industry.
Yeah, they're awesome. I mean, we're doing a bin project right now. We've worked with them for, what, almost 2 years now? The whole team there is just superb.
Yeah, we got to do a factory tour this last season, and they were so welcoming. It's fun to see what they do to support their employees, what they do to support their community. And I just saw, too, that Eugene, founder of Sukup, and his wife celebrated more than 70 years of marriage.
Wow, that's something to look forward to for my wife and your wife, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We thank them so much for their partnership. If you guys just want a wholesome company that's going to look out for you and put your farm's best interest ahead of you, visit SukupManufacturing.com to check out them for all your grain handling needs. Right, Corey?
That's right.
It's good to have support around a team.
Yes.
It's kind of weird to watch yourself, but do you ever go out there and watch our shows on YouTube?
I watch the shorts. Well, because I'm posting them quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I need to see what's, you know, when I should post one or not.
Yeah.
I love the shorts.
So this conversation here is going to be fun. It's going to be over my head.
Yeah.
But it's fun. So what do you think the listeners should take away from our conversation coming up?
So we're going to be talking diesel engines.
Yeah.
And how it can be tuned safely. And I think all of us can like that, right?
Right. So. Absolutely. Well, it's one more ad break here, and we'll get into that conversation.
Thanks. And listeners, welcome to another used equipment market update powered by TractorZoom. This week, we're going to focus specifically on combines and the combine market. Revisiting the combine index, like I mentioned in a previous episode, the combine market remains very strong in the Midwest. We are starting to see things cool off a little bit across the nation as supplies start to increase across the country. The next question I get often is not so much, you know, what is my combine worth today, but what will it be worth in 4, 5, or 6 years? So today we're going to look at a 2022 John Deere S780, less than 100 hours, four-wheel drive, power bin fold, chopper, spreader, you know, fully equipped machine in excellent condition. So when we think about actual depreciation, not depreciation for accounting or for tax purposes, but what is the value of this machine in a year, 2 years, 3 years, and so on, there's a couple different methods we can look at. The first most common one I see is straight line depreciation. So let's take the value today minus the value we think it'll be worth in 5 years, for example, divided by the years used. So a basic example is, let's say my combine's worth $200,000 today. I think it'll be worth $100,000 in 5 years. Divide that difference by five and you get about $20,000 per year. A more accurate way of looking at it is market value depreciation. So using comparable sales, what is the market telling us this thing will be worth when we add 250 hours per year based on what we're seeing? This informs a replacement strategy for the farm and when potentially the best time to buy or trade might happen. So when we look at market value versus straight line depreciation, for those watching online, you'll see in that first year, we're going to take a lot more depreciation, actual depreciation, around $94,000 for this machine. In year eight, it'll be closer to around $11,000, assuming we're going to keep this machine for 8 years. Now, what this does is you start to understand there's a difference in the curve. Instead of that straight line down, you're going to take more depreciation in the first few years of the machine. So typically, let's say you have a new machine and you drive it off the lot, similar to cars, you're probably taking somewhere between 17 and 20% of that value off the machine, with a majority of the value coming in actual depreciation in the first couple years. So why is this important? First, updating your insurance premiums every year, making sure you have an accurate value in this market is critical. Second, as Tanner can note, the relationship with your banker is critically important. Let's have good values. And third, that farm replacement strategy. So are we going to try to replace this thing at year four, year five, year six? Like I mentioned before, there's a really easy way to keep track of your values. You can download the TractorZoom app, or you can go out to TractorZoom.com and start your equipment list. As you update those details and those values, that equipment's going to update in value, giving you an auction and dealer average for both. This has been your farm equipment update for the Farm for Profit podcast.
Corey, this is a topic that I think our listeners are going to really enjoy, especially those down here able to hear at National Farm Machinery Show 2023.
I got to imagine this topic is going to be huge for down here with all the diesel motors that are here.
Yes, that's right. And it's one that we've kind of indirectly had a lot of requests for. And our guest today, we've been connected for over a year because she tried to come up and meet us last year, and we scheduled ourselves way, way too closely.
Yep. You were drowning in guests last year.
It was a fantastic experience, but I think we're going to enjoy this year a lot more when we put this together. So today, Corey, we're going to talk about how we can tune or chip or program all the terms that I'm hoping to get some more depth behind in regards to our motor, like you were saying. So our guest today is, I should have asked before we even started, I have Sherry Dooley Jones.
Correct.
And that's perfect.
That is perfect.
Okay. And why would you know anything about this topic? Tell our listeners about who you are and your connection to this.
So I actually met the owner of the company back in about 2007, I think it was. And long story short, ended up moving to Austria to cohabitate with the man's name who is on the box. And when I first moved to the US from Australia, the world economy died. Literally just fell in a great big hole. And my family, part of my family is a farming background. I'm obviously a native English speaker, Australian, but still native English. And I sort of said, I can't help you with cars. I don't understand car tuning. I don't speak other languages. I can go to the US. I can help with ag. And that's really how I ended up being the driving force for the US market. We set up our first office, dedicated office in the US in February 2008, I think it was. And have been here ever since with a physical presence. So I'm just, I guess I've been here for a long time now.
So the name on the box is?
Herbert. Well, the name on the box is Steinbauer.
Okay.
The person behind the product right from the inception, from the idea where it all started, is Herbert Steinbauer. And he's still a daily in the business now. It's not as if he started the company and then kind of left like most other tuning manufacturers. Somebody had a great idea and then they left. He's still involved in the daily business. He spends 2 to 3 months a year in the US on the ground as well, which is a nice thing. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have that involvement and still the connection to the people who buy a product.
And when I was trying to figure out what title to put on the piece of paper for you, holy smokes.
I guess it's very similar to a lot of companies, somewhat a family business, for want of a better term. You end up wearing many hats. Mm-hmm. My training is in legal and regulatory from a school perspective, but thousands of pages of contracts and things is so not interesting.
Right.
So for Steinbauer, I do everything from the daily management of the US business to human resources, marketing, and sales. I generally, each year, I speak to between 200 and 400 customers a year. I still actively call people. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that part of it. I like the interaction and the contact that you get with customers.
Right.
But with that is a whole list of other jobs that come with it. So it's a gray area.
Yeah, I love it. I love because you're going to have perspective from all over the company to help us with our answers today.
I hope so.
Corey, do you have any tuning chips on your farm?
We do. We actually have one Steinbauer on our John Deere 9520. Yeah. And the reason that we did that was because we needed more horsepower, right? Not, we didn't need a new tractor. We just needed a little bit more horse. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to give you guys kudos because I've heard of Steinbauer. Like, the branding that is behind Steinbauer has been fantastic because you don't just hear, when you hear someone like soup up a pickup, like a diesel truck, yeah, I threw a chip on it.
Yeah.
But in anything in ag, even if it's not a Steinbauer, I feel like, yeah, I got a Steinbauer on it. Right? It's like, it's kind of crazy that you guys have that name and recognition. It's pretty cool.
It is. You know, we've been very conscious of the brand that we've built, especially here in the US, because being from that, having exposure to farming, I appreciate and understand a farmer can't afford for a machine to go down because he's bought a crappy product.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a doable thing.
Yeah.
When you need to harvest, you've got to get out there and harvest.
Right.
You can't afford downtime. And so for us, it was important to build that brand from a quality perspective to differentiate us between other products. Uh-huh.
So are we using the terminology right? Because we should probably start off on the right foot. So I asked him if he had any chips. What do we use? Because is it chips? Is it tuning? Is it a programmer? How do we go about that?
I think there is no correct term because every state is different. Every country is different. I can go to different places in Australia and it'll be called five different things. At the end of the day, from an overall perspective, we like to say it's a performance enhancement.
Okay.
So that's the general term that we use. We're enhancing what's already there. Mm-hmm. It can be a chip tuner. It can be anything. But at the end of the day, you want it to do that job, which is enhance the performance, which is already within that engine's capability.
Yep.
You can call it anything.
And where, like, a chip might get a bad name is, you know, someone can go too much, right?
Yes, they can. So the slang term for chip actually came from very early on. Most of the tuners that came out were a rail pressure box. And the chips on a rail pressure electronic are tiny. It's not much more advanced than what's in my hairdresser, you know, in my hairdryer or my toaster.
Yep.
It's a very simplistic electronic. Mm-hmm. And it's like a computer chip.
Yep.
It's small. It was simple. They still use them today. But that's where the term chip came from because you were basically looking at a very small electronic chip.
Yep. But some companies might have gone a little bit too much or you might have a lot of issues by pushing it too far, correct?
I believe that the biggest difference and issue that we see now is that you have companies that are putting products out there when they don't have the engineering experience to understand what an engine is capable of. So, for instance, I can buy a rail pressure electronic in a board of maybe $2,000 in a run. This is going to cost me $1.75 a board. I can then put that in a cheap housing send it out, somebody else will program it. Now, that guy who's programming, he may not even know what a combine looks like.
Yeah.
But he just knows that he can do this to it and get this much power. Woohoo! Great.
Yep, right.
Not so much, because you need to understand where within that horsepower range, that track, that engine sits. Like, what is it from factory? Where does that sit? And also, what happens downstream from that? Because just because the engine is the same, some components may differ. And this is where the dangerous thing is. You have a lot of cheap products with a lot of uneducated people as to what they're doing to those engines. A tractor is not a car. It's a very different piece of equipment.
Right. So what can be affected? Like, what types? You just talked about rail pressure as one, but is there's other ways to affect the motor. So what are the most common options for our listeners?
So within the US market, you're basically going to have three forms of tuning. So you'll have your ECU flash tuning, which most people are pretty familiar with. You will have a rail pressure electronic, which is usually a small electronic. You can feel the weight. You can feel that there's not much meat involved in that. And then you will have what we do, which is injector duration. I probably should have brought down a module to show you with a board. But this is an advanced electronic. We use embedded technology. So our boards, which we print all in-house, have thousands of plots. So we can do, we have to monitor signals. We have to look at the ECU. We're talking to the ECU like you and I are having a conversation now. Your ECU flash tuning is I class it as a crude form of flash tuning.
Okay.
Because what most people are not aware is the guy who cracks that map originally from the new John Deere tractor that came out, for instance, they bought out the brand new 13.6 engine. That flash map that was cracked, it didn't come from an engineer who knew what they were doing and knew what that engine was in or what it'd even be used for. Mm-hmm. You know, this comes literally out of Italy, Netherlands, a couple of places in Finland. This is what these guys do. They just crack the map. They then sell that open map to XYZ Flash Tuning. XYZ Flash Tuning then on-sells that map again, an open map now.
Right.
So you can turn things off and on at will. They then sell that open map to 100 different subcontractors. Now, I don't know the skill level of all of those subcontractors.
Right, in the middle.
In the middle.
Yeah.
Who's touched what? Who's changing what? Now, there are some very good guys who do this because they understand, they come from an engineering background, they understand what they're doing, but the percentage of those is extremely low. And what you can and can't do, what you can and can't turn off, especially now with emission systems too, you've got so many things involved within that ECU. Do you know what is turned off?
Right,
yeah.
You know, we've had customers that have called us because they were convinced, oh, this is the same as a Steinbauer, it's just without the module. And so the customer's gone, oh, so it's a Steinbauer without the hardware, great.
Yeah, right.
And then something's happened, the dealer's gone out, had a look at the machine. Not only did they flash the engine to get more power, they switched the guy's def off. So now he's without warranty.
So back to my comment, maybe it's not good that the branding is so well that they're calling it a Steinbauer, and it's not.
I think it's a compliment.
It is a compliment, yeah.
It's just unfortunate that not everybody is honest about what their product does and the skill level of the people who sell, adjust, whatever that product.
So where does Steinbauer enter this chat, right? Like, where you got these guys that are cracking the code and all that, like where do you get in and make sure that you're doing the right things?
So we have an engineering team. All our development team is based out of Austria, a primary development team. They all have, most of them have dual degrees, so engineering and software, so they understand both the mechanical aspect as well as the programming aspect of the machine, which is important. You have to understand both. Then all of our products are field tested. So we have two technicians based out of the US here. Everything is field tested here, because what most people are not aware is that sometimes there is a slight difference in a John Deere that rolls out in Europe to one that goes to Australia, to one that's here in the US. There can be slight differences. So we need to test things in the field here.
Right.
Physically sit our butt on the seat.
Yeah.
And ride with a customer. We need to know how that feels like. How does he feel? Mm-hmm. Does he feel that the power is coming in at the right time?
Right.
Is it smooth? It's not just a matter of, here's a pen, buy my pen.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated than that. And the machinery is expensive. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable selling a product that I didn't know had been tested properly. This is a big difference for us.
So it's not like Deere is inviting you in to their R&D room to say, this is our brand new motor that's going to go out in 2026 and you can start building your chips for it.
No.
You have to almost reverse engineer.
I guess it's not so much a reverse engineering, because we've been doing it for so long.
Okay.
The manufacturers really, you've only got a couple of ECU manufacturers. You know, they're made by a couple of different companies.
Right.
The programming is going to differ. But the difference with having staff with all of the experience that we have, our head engineer, he's been with the company for 20 years now, almost 20 years. So he's been doing this for that long that we're not having to reinvent the wheel every time. We're basically just looking at it as a building block of all of those years
that
we've been done.
Yep.
We've done before, which is, I mean, you've had companies in the US that have tried to do their own injector duration modules.
Right.
It's expensive, you know, research, development, testing, the manufacturing of the boards, all of this stuff costs money. Mm-hmm. It's much cheaper to flash tune or to buy a cheap electronic out of China and reprogram whatever you want to do as a rail pressure. This is cheap.
Yep.
So but it's not good long-term for your engine.
Do the OEMs not like you then?
Honestly, I would say probably not. Okay. I wouldn't like us either. You know, we're like any aftermarket product. If John Deere can sell a John Deere corn header, they would rather sell one with a John Deere brand on it than an aftermarket product.
But if they know there's an aftermarket product, why aren't they offering you can buy this 8410R and for X dollars more, we'll tune it to 450.
They do that.
They do that.
That's what, like, so an 8345... and an 8370 are the same motor, right? And I'm pretty sure the same parts.
Yeah.
It's just a program.
Yeah. So the manufacturer does... So when they bring out... they all have to do their EPA compliance testing, which, you know, they get their CARB certification, whatever else. They have one engine family, which has multiple horsepower ranges. They don't like us because we do what they do at a tenth of the cost.
Right. Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's where we're going to head next, is kind of the profitability of doing all of this. So I want to know first, what can we tune? I'm talking like a combine, a tractor, what? Just anything with a motor?
Anything with a diesel, an electronic diesel engine. So all of your modern diesels we do. We have done diesel locomotives, boats, small compact tractors, literally everything. I mean, since I've been with the company, we've done some crazy stuff. Fire engines, all sorts of things. So would you remember Transformers, the really cool Panther fire engine that was on that?
Yeah.
So this was a special project that we did, being an engineering company. The fire engine manufacturer, Rosenbauer, came to us and said, we're unable to meet the response time with the standard engine that's in the that's in the fire engine. They have to meet a response time fully loaded. Manufacturer couldn't meet the emissions and the power response. So they came to us. They'd been working on the project independently for several months. They came to us within a couple of months. We had a new module, passed emissions testing, passed the emergency response time. So being an engineering company, we're able to do different cool projects. It was the same with the diesel locomotive.
Right.
It had a special requirement, and those things are heavy. You wouldn't think they need more power. Their problem was with the torque.
Okay. Oh.
So it was we were able to approach that. We look at their problem and come up with a solution. And that's really, for me, what we do. We solve people's problems.
Yep. That makes sense.
No, that does. So now let's get into the profitability side. Mm-hmm. This makes sense, and you already made one comment. It's a tenth of what the OEM is going to charge you.
Around that, yeah. Depending on the manufacturer or the engine range, it's around a sixth to a tenth.
Because you don't just go, I want this tractor to be the next one. It's you have to go buy the next tractor.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to trade it, and that physical price difference between the two is what it costs you.
And it's the same, and you would know if you decide to change your planter, or you, instead of doing a till, you want to put in a disc plow, you're in trouble with power.
Yeah.
What do you do? Sell your tractor so that you can't have the, or do you trade one off against the other?
Right.
Everyone wants bigger implements, but not all tractors can pull the implements.
That's true. And that's why, you know, we chose on our farm to chip our tractor. We'd owned that tractor for 10, 15 years, and it was fine. But then we got a different implement. Mm-hmm. That was a 16-row strip-till bar, and it just made the thing go with its tongue hanging out and was struggling.
And it was like
Steinbauer on it, and it's like, well, it's a new tractor.
Yeah. That was like pulling an apartment block behind you then when you put the...
Yeah, and it ran much more efficiently.
Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense, because not only do you not have to trade for more horsepower, mm-hmm. or... I'm assuming you can also affect fuel efficiency.
So I guess we look at it, the marketing for tuning is very misleading, because everybody says, you'll save 15% fuel and you'll save this. Well, you cannot get more power without adding more fuel. Mm-hmm. That's just what basic 101. And so we like to look at it as the net effect. So it's not just the additional power that you get. So you can buy a lower horsepower tractor and achieve what you were looking for instead of buying the higher horsepower. You'll have less engine hours, which from a farming perspective, engine hours is everything when you go to sell or trade in your machine.
Especially on newer equipment. It is expensive, that new hour.
It is. It's like that's a lot. If the difference, you know, that 100 hours can make on a machine is a lot.
Very much.
If you're employing staff to run those machines, you're paying less wages. They've got less time with their butt in the seat.
Yep.
And then you have the overall benefit of time. Nobody has enough time. Farmers never have enough time.
Right.
You know, there's either too much rain, not enough rain. I have to get planning finished. I need to get the seed in.
Yeah.
Everything is time conducive. So if what would normally take you 5 days, if you can do in 4.5 or mm-hmm. 4, it's an overall benefit with money, fuel. You know, you're running the machine less, so you're going to use less DEF.
Yep.
DEF is here to stay. No one likes it, but it's a reality of modern farming.
Yeah.
It's here. So you have to look at everything, not and any... regardless of what tuning company or product you're looking at, if they can't explain to you where is that 15% coming from, for me, then you have a problem.
Right.
You can't just say, I'm going to save you 15% power. I don't know what your dirt looks like. I don't know, are you on flat ground? Are you on hilly ground? Is it heavy soil? Is it light? I don't know what you're doing. So what you get on your farm can be different to someone else. There are different operators. You have humans involved.
Yep.
You would know. Some guys can drive a tractor better than others. So it's all going to be relative, and you have to look at from an overall perspective where the saving is going to come from.
Mm-hmm. But it's there.
It's there.
The savings is there. So why doesn't everybody do it? Or is everybody doing it?
A lot of people do it. You know, we have a large customer base. Unlike a lot of people, I don't put everyone on YouTube. I don't stand there at the farm and go, hey, Belle, show us your new tractor.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy. For me, that's an invasion of somebody's privacy. Sure. People entrust us to help them with their farming.
Yeah.
The least I can do is respect their privacy. We have customers all over the world. And yes, a lot of people do it, but a lot of people still don't because they've had that bad experience. They've bought a chip tuner. I took one back on the box on the booth this morning from a customer that's like, yeah. What is this? Yeah. They said it's like a Steinbauer, and it's like...
Yeah. or just they heard the story, yeah. right? Like, farmers hear what happens in the county over. Yeah. Right. They heard they blew up a tractor, right. they had a chip on it. It was probably one of them Steinbauer, you know, or yeah. something like yeah. that. And
you know, it's yeah. guilt by association.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it would have been nice if the industry had have been regulated. So very much on the over-the-road stuff, you have SEMA, they came in... and really put a gold stamp on a lot of things. And it got rid of a lot of the cheaper end product, the misinformation, because there was really that standard in place. Unfortunately, for farming, there wasn't that step taken. And the farmers are the ones who miss out in the end
right.
because you have a wealth of misinformation. You have products which are, at the end of the day, they're not even a paperweight because yeah. they'll fly away. But the farmer is the one who pays the price at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. What is the negatives like that could come, not maybe from performance, but I'm thinking around, you take your tractor in that you just bought, you put this Steinbauer on, and it's still under warranty at John Deere, Fendt, wherever. Mm-hmm. Are they voiding the warranty?
That's the $1,000 question, I guess.
Should they be? Since you have so much engineering, so if they are voiding it, and you can prove that it's helping.
I guess technically, I mean, the U.S. is fortunate that you have Magnuson Moss, which protects consumers with purchasing aftermarket products. The manufacturers do try to circumvent that by bringing in their limited warranties and certain wording. I believe that a lot of this will change now with right to repair. I think the next couple of years from a warranty perspective will be very interesting. But I completely appreciate from a manufacturer's point of view, if there's so many products out there with people that don't know what they're doing, you know...
right. They're trying to protect themselves.
They're trying yep. to protect themselves. This yeah. stuff is expensive.
Well, they don't want to pay for a new motor right. because no. someone put a faulty product in.
Or the fact that maybe the guy that did the flash tuning, he wasn't really sure which boxes to tick, so he just switched off all of the safety setting lights. You don't need any of those lights. They're just annoying. Well, you know, they're there yeah, for a reason.
Uh-huh.
I would like to think John Deere knows or Case knows or
right.
they know when a fault code should come on, that it comes yeah. on for a reason. And I think it's unfortunate. I guess it doesn't really answer the question yeah. yes or no, because it's a gray area.
Yeah.
It really is. I understand the manufacturer's point of view, because we're from an engineering background, we get called in to fix problems all of the time with small projects, which are often caused by people doing things when they don't understand the cause and effect.
Right.
How about this then? The chip's on there, you got a problem. That's not anything to do with the chip, but you can take it off pretty easy. Can they tell that it was on?
No, not with our product, they can't. So with a Steinbauer, it's once you remove it, it's invisible. It leaves no footprint on the ECU. Some of the rail pressure boxes you can get from trend monitoring, you can see that there is an increase over an irregular amount of time
sure.
Within rail. I mean, Fendt probably is one of the best brands as far as their ECUs are concerned. From what we've seen, they're considerably a long way ahead wow. of your John Deere and Case with their ECU technology. The other guys are getting there. In Europe, we have BMW and Mercedes. BMW will now void the VIN number for the life of the vehicle if it detects that it's been flashed.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, so you've got somebody who's gone out yeah. and spent €140,000 on this nice BMW.
Yep.
Had some guy come in and flash tune it. Over the air, it goes back. The manufacturer sees, the car yard sees that something's right. been done here.
Oh, my gosh.
VIN number void for
life. Feels like a complete, like, what am I trying to look for? But invasion of privacy.
you know, those little terms and conditions that no one reads.
That's right.
Lawyers, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's why we have so many lawyers, isn't it? So that you can write pages and pages of terms and conditions. But with our product, you can't see anything. We have had in Europe, we've literally had Mercedes, Porsche pull a vehicle apart trying to find that the product has been installed.
Right. Yeah.
And unless you're physically standing there with the product in your hand, you can't see it. Now, we do recommend to our customers to remove the module if they have servers coming out. It's not a nice thing. But it's a reality. That's just what you have to do.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do.
It's very easy. It's just a simple unclick.
Power and unplug.
So if it's easy to take off, can I have it and switch it between my tractor and my combine?
Yes. If it's the same engine.
Same engine. Okay, so that's the commonality.
We do have a lot of customers that will purchase two harnesses and switch the module between, you know, for planting. They'll have it on the plant tractor. They don't need it on the grain cart for harvest, and then they'll pop it on the... But it has to be the same engine.
And is it... It's just like one stage, right? Or one tune. There's not like a, I want to go up to the highest or the medium or the lowest, right?
Technically, yes. So because we do the mapping here, the fine-tuning here, most of what you'll get is what we call the sweet spot, is where we're happiest with the settings as far as the performance is concerned, the power when it's coming in. That's what comes out at factory. Now, all of our modules do have some adjustment.
Yeah.
So that you can go up a little bit more in power or down. But it's one of those things where we always have the discussion with the customer before they start doing that.
How is that, like, you have to plug it into the computer and change it, or it's actually a setting on the...
It's within the module itself. So the new modules that we have out, they actually work on Bluetooth. So we have an app development at the moment where we can, our technicians now can Bluetooth into the module. But eventually customers will be able to download the app. They'll have all of the information on there. And then our programmer, our technicians will be able to send a slight adjustment.
Yep. Very interesting. Go ahead.
I just was trying to think of, is this only new equipment? Because if you're looking at adjusting computer components, if you're looking at, you know, obviously frame rail pressure, that's different. But can our listeners do this for any of their tractors, or is there kind of a cutoff that only 1980s and newer or something along those lines?
About 2004? They started really with the electronics.
Well, I mean, our 9520 is a 2004.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's a lot of electronics even before that a little bit. Yeah,
so as long as it's electronic, and it's, I guess there's a misconception from people. We did do an information campaign last year because the misconception was out there that, the older my tractor, I don't have to spend money and buy a good tuner.
Yeah.
I can just buy, you know, any old thing. And it's really probably the reverse. You know, your tractor's got a lot of hours on it. It's been broke in. Do you really just want to put something cheap and nasty on there?
Yeah,
right.
This is, you know, but we have customers who have, they've bought, especially last year with the auctions, because new machinery was so hard to get. Last year, I sold more products for older machinery than what we've ever done.
They're looking for, they want to upgrade.
Remember the EDC pump?
Right, yeah.
The John Deere's that came out with the EDC pump? I've never sold so many of those in a year as what we did last year.
Crazy.
The product works great, but people were literally pulling these machines out. I don't know where they got them from barns underneath their bed. I don't know where these things came from.
It was probably just something that they had and they were using, but all of a sudden that tractor had to go do a different job, pull a different implement, or like we did, right?
And the old Case Magnums, there were so many of those that just, you know, we had phone calls on that people had kind of parked and just used every now and then, that really couldn't get the new machinery that they wanted and needed more horsepower. And they're like, well, you know, can I throw a tuner on it? So
that made me think about that. You popped a question in my head about auction purchases. If the manufacturer can't tell that a chip's been on it, how do we know if we're going and looking at an auction tractor that it's been tuned and maybe not by somebody as reputable as Steinbauer?
quite often you won't. I think some of the, I know, especially with the emission stuff now, Ritchie Brothers, I could be wrong, we did hear some information from customers that if the emission system has been deleted, that they will not sell the tractor at auction.
At auction? I know that there's companies that, I mean, they have to disclose it.
Yeah.
It's because out of fear, right? Because, like, the EPA could come down on them.
I mean, that's a very real fear. Yeah. You know, it's expensive. If you look at the over the road truck industry, when the EPA went in after those guys, there were right. companies that shut down, and there was a flow on effect because the manufacturer sold it to somebody who sold it to somebody else who right. sold it to somebody else. Now, I don't ever want to be in the position where I'm putting my customer within reach of that kind of exposure to the EPA.
So Steinbauer is a worldwide company, and clearly we have tier 4 emissions here in mm-hmm. the United States, but you go to Australia and it's only tier 3-ish.
Three-ish.
Yes. And so, like, there's not a standard across the world. Where is Steinbauer's position on emissions?
Look, diesel was dirty. Let's okay. face it. There was not great engine development that went in. They got away with producing loud, dirty engines for far too long. The newer engines are better. They're cleaner. But unfortunately, part of the trade-off is they often get choked up. And the emission systems from standard from the manufacturer are not always reliable. You also have to look at the logistics that goes into delivering that DEF product to the farmer. Or, you know,
and all the sensors and the DEF tank heaters and the cost that it costs to put on that tractor.
It does. It's, you know, it's an extensive cost, and I wish there was a way that it you could find a happy medium.
Yeah.
But I don't foresee in the very near future that there's going to be anything. We're up to stage 5 in Europe. You know, we've had stage 5 out for a year.
What I just can't stand is I'll go look at a tractor that's 5 years old, right? Mm-hmm. That's a new tractor to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 2,000 hours on it. And all around that DEF tank, if they just had an employee that didn't really care, it's rusty
yeah.
and nasty, and it's just, I can't stand that. The longevity of these tractors is not going to be there.
I have no idea how they call that environmentally friendly when you have to look at how much does it take to produce this byproduct, because that's what it really is. So they're producing the byproduct. You've got all of the spare parts that you have to use. So you're creating, you have to manufacture more parts, sensors, lines, tanks, you name it. That's more parts you have to manufacture, which is more waste. Then you've got some guy who has to deliver it to the farm, and the farmer has to have a tank on his pickup, so he needs another pickup now because he's got fuel on one.
Yep.
Now he needs another one for the DEF yep. fluid, and then he's got to deliver it.
Yeah, and you got to heat it to use it.
You've got to heat it to use it. So it's almost, yes, the engine's more efficient, but when you're looking at DEF, if you look at laterally, the balance is kind of hard to quantify,
yeah.
really, when you take everything into consideration. Well, I mean, other than the fact that BHP, what their profit was like $40 yeah. billion dollars or something, you know.
So
other than manufacturing the product, yeah. I don't really think anyone else
So I got to say allegedly here, right, there's some people that delete, take mm-hmm. the emissions mm-hmm. off of diesel mm-hmm. engines. Some might, some maybe they don't. I don't know. Does this Steinbauer system work? Obviously, it works with it, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to. But does it work well without it?
No, we don't like to tune tractors that have had the DEF turned off, because I don't know what else they've turned off to yeah,
right.
be able
there's
to turn
variables.
The DEF off. Yeah, there's too many variables. It's too risky, and unfortunately, nobody tells the poor farmer when he deletes that DEF, when he wants to go sell his tractor, the
right.
dealer's going to give him a huge chunk less, because the dealer has to return that tractor to standard, in order to sell it. No one's going to tell him that. They're just going to say, hey, $1,200, I'll delete your
DEF. And
DEF.
Right now, woo-hoo. The audience is split if you see it on an auction.
It is.
Some people are looking forward to buying something that has DEF deleted, and others concern as to what else has been altered.
I would say initially, yes, you're excited if you knew who did it.
Yeah.
They might just be excited to get one with DEF on it and then allegedly have it deleted by someone that you know is doing it right.
And you know, it is one of those things. You have guys that do it. I mean, Australia, like we said, they've got tier 2-3-ish emissions. Mm-hmm. You'll have guys there because you're in the middle of nowhere. You can't get DEF delivered. So, and there are some great guys there that do the deleting, but they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not turning off other safety codes in order to get that DEF. Yep. It's the same South America, you know, Africa. I know Russia is a dirty word, but Russia has a massive agricultural industry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That they can't get parts. They have new machinery there. They can't get parts for the DEF. They have to delete it. They have no other option. There are good people out there that do it, but what the balance is, especially within the US market, we've seen a huge saturation of guys making way too much money from the flash industry in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's like, well, you know.
Right. I just have an issue, and I've had it on a couple things and semis, of when it costs you more to repair the DEF system that was faulty in the first place and didn't last long enough than to just have it deleted and never have to deal with it again. When it costs $2,000 to delete or $4,500 to fix back to something that you know is going to break in another 2 years.
Yeah.
It just pisses me off. It does.
It does.
Yeah. Let me ask it in a different way. So you have DEF on newer tractors, an emission system. Does the Steinbauer, and you said it can sometimes like choke the engines, right?
At a manufacturer end, at the lower end of the horsepower range, some of those engines are so choked up because it's, you know, that engine has way more possibility, yep, and it's all choked up because it's way at the bottom end of that horsepower range.
So it actually runs more efficiently at the higher horsepower range, and you can help with that.
I guess it's how you look at it. It's the testing that we have done. Unfortunately, the US is very difficult to get access to a machine in order to do more emissions testing here, but the emissions testing that we've done in Europe, it's actually better or not worse than standard. So that's a term. So in Europe, you have to get what's called a TÜV certificate, which is like an emission-based certificate for vehicles. And all of the thousands and thousands of engines we've tested, our products are always better than or not worse than standard. So we meet the standard emission that the engine is certified, or in a lot of instances, like with the Rosenbauer fire engine, we were actually better with the emissions.
Right. Nice.
But it changes a lot. You know, we have more than 7,500 applications. Not everyone is going to be exactly the same.
How does that, if you do all this engineering and testing and you have to do it after the, like you said, you're not in the R&D, are you buying brand new tractors, or are you going to people that are buying them? Or maybe that's the secret sauce.
Yes, no.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay.
How do we know?
Next question. Yep.
How do we know how much horsepower we can get to? Is this something where we make the request, I'd like to gain 50, or that's the advice you provide as a service?
So when we're doing the testing, we'll look at that engine and what it's capable of throughout the full horsepower range. So you'll say, okay, this is at the bottom of the horsepower range. This is the very top horsepower range that engine has been rated for. There's always going to be a little bit of extra room. We know that at the top end. I mean, it's an industrial engine. These things, I mean, this is not a...
Just like a tire, you can fill it 15 PSI higher than what it says, right?
You know? You can. And so our engineers look at the overall calculation and we'll say, at the bottom end of the horsepower range, we can give the full 25% additional horsepower and torque.
Yep.
Once we get to the top end of the range... Some of them there may be comfortable with 15%, some maybe 20%. It depends on the engine. And you only know that through years and years and years of going through the same process.
So, if Deere has a tractor with 3 different horsepower levels and you're at the top, you can still increase it.
Yes.
Just maybe not as much as the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also depends on what's different at that top end of the horsepower. You know, does something else change? You know, from a mechanical standpoint, different components involved.
Yeah,
that's true. I didn't think about that.
Is it drive line? Yeah, it's something, transmission, whatever, hydraulic pump.
Yeah. There are different things you have to look at, and that's where the engineering side comes into it versus guesswork. of, well, hey, I've got this and it'll be great and I'll just give you 30% extra power.
So do any of these tractor pull tractors have a Steinbauer on them?
Different. It's some of the correct term is. I'm so bad at the whole tractor pull thing. But you have some that do like weekend with just like a standard tractor.
Yeah, the farm stock. Yeah. That's what they call it or something.
Yeah. Those could probably have it. Yeah,
some of those guys.
Everything else,
do,
I'm pretty sure they have their own engineer on the dang team.
Yeah, pretty much. And there are some that you have that bus thing where they do the buses, the school buses, where they crash into each other.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a few of those running around that have Steinbauer connected to them.
That's funny.
You know what needs a Steinbauer is the Busch Light Combine.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I happen to have one of those.
I just happen to know someone who works for Steinbauer.
Really, yeah.
Funny that.
Maybe hours. I could run a 12-row chopping corn head now instead of an 8-row chopping
corn head. And it would just be the sheer power of the Busch Light.
Yeah.
Driving it.
I think Busch Light is a lot of things, but powerful is just not one of them. That is not what comes to mind.
So as we get ready to wrap up this conversation, what are you most excited about coming down the pipe? I mean, you mentioned that your technology and your engineers are just kind of continually building upon what you've got for experience.
Mm-hmm. Probably, I mean, look, in all honesty, the tuning industry as we see it, you've maybe got another 10 years where the tuning industry is going to struggle along. The EPA is going to get more restrictive. The manufacturers are getting smarter. The new Fendt engines that are out now, none of the flash guys can do these right now. So the manufacturers are getting smarter. For us, we're always ahead of the curve. We started a new product about 5 years ago in Europe. We were about to launch it in the US when COVID happened, which is basically telematics and management. So we've taken our electronic background with the modules and transferred that over, because one of the big things being in the farm industry that you hear is that, oh, I've got a John Deere and so I've got to have JD Link. I have Case. I've got to have this.
Yep.
I have a truck and I've got to have this. And so they're trying to juggle five different systems just to see where their stuff is. And so with our electronic gateways, I don't care what it is. You can plug it in, you can monitor it, you can see it all in a screen. The system can send you an alert if your battery, because you know how expensive batteries are for machinery. If your battery voltage is getting low, it can send you an alert.
Instead of just going out to a dead battery.
I feel like everything last year on the farm, we put new batteries in. It's like they get to 2 years or less and they're just done. Yeah.
And this is expensive. Yeah. And that was one of the big things, one of the main feedback that we kept hearing from customers is, oh, I'm so tired of paying this membership for these machines and then this, and I'm having to jump in and out. So for us, looking forward, that's, you know, we'll always have the tuning.
Right.
That's what we do. But we have to look forward and say, what else can we give our customers to make their life easier?
Right. Yep.
And this product is one of those things, because fuel tanks, for, you know, you've got your irrigation pumps where that have fuel tanks attached to them. Wouldn't, instead of sending some guy around to check the fuel manually, wouldn't you just like to be able to monitor electronically? So there are different things and different projects that we're always looking ahead at what we need to do next.
Right.
And I think for us, that's the most exciting thing. Yes, we've got tuning and it's always going to be there, and we'll always continue to innovate and bring out the new products, but I need to look at the next 20 years, not just the next 5 or 10. I need to know, what does everyone need in 20 years' time, and start delivering that for them now.
Oh, that's good. I think we got a lot of answers today.
I hope so.
Are you guys in... So I know you said just diesel, but don't you guys do like performance sports cars and stuff like that too?
We do. I'm not a car girl. I don't understand car people.
You do have options for that. So if guy's got a tractor and he likes performance cars, you guys have products for that too.
We do. We don't do really any over-the-road stuff here in the US, basically because the market here is saturated with cheap products. I don't want to compete with a $500 tuner. I just don't.
Right.
I don't have the time or the patience for that.
That's fair. We totally get it.
It is. And it's a different mindset. If you look at the customer base, these are different people. They want different things. You know, everybody, like farmers, for me, farmers make sense. They need more power. They need to get things done more efficiently. A car guy?
Yeah.
Spend $100,000 on a car and it doesn't have enough horsepower. Are you insane?
Like, yeah. Well, it's crazy. Also, you can spend $100,000 on a piece of crap now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. So, it is. I mean, we do the modules for Tesla. So we have power modules, like actual power modules, for EV cars, which is kind of cool. It's a little frightening to be a passenger. Trust me. when we were doing testing with the EV cars. I always get to be the passenger because Herbert always tests any vehicle products that we have. He's the first person to test it.
Absolutely. He's the boss.
That's a whole other ballgame. There's no combustion there.
Oh, I was a little bit white.
Oh, really? So you got direct access to Elon then?
No one wants direct access to him. That guy has problems. Brilliant.
It takes correct. You have to have problems.
You have to have a mind like that to do. Like, I'm just going to buy Twitter.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Huh. So is that the perception, or is that you came over to America? Are we just cheap and fast? Is that our culture?
Don't call you cheap and fast. I guess the biggest struggle here is misinformation is so prolific. It's just everywhere. And there is no policing of misinformation. Whether it's tuning or it doesn't matter what it is, I can, and people do that to us all of the time. They literally base their marketing and tell customers it's the same as a Steinbauer without a module, or Steinbauer have no US office. They're not here. They ship everything from Europe. That you can tell customers complete fabrication and get away with it. There's no, you know, we went through a period where we had a tuning company that was saying that was selling, we have a patent for the piezo injection system for injector duration. They were advertising the exact same thing. And we were like, we have the patent for that. They can't say that they're selling this product. But at the end of the day, how much sleep do you want to lose? And how much money do you want to spend on an attorney?
Yep.
Well, I mean, if you think about it from the way of like free market, right? You want less regulation. Right, you'd hope that your product would rise to the top because of performance, and you know, people used your product and it worked good, and they tell the neighbor and that. But unfortunately, there's a lot of bad apples.
Right,
there is, and I guess that's the trade-off: is that you have the free marketplace, but that opens the door for misleading communication and advertising for customers, and that's difficult. It's hard for everyone. You can go online now. And you can read 25 different, just crap. You know, I get it constantly. I write all of our marketing material. I'll write something. And a month later, I'll be looking through different websites. And I'll just go, oh, God, that's exactly what I wrote. Can't just change more than one word.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating.
Note to self, Corey, change just a couple words when we put ours out.
Yeah, just one or two.
Yeah. I mean, if you had the policing aspect
the words
of it.
That says from Sherry.
Yeah, there you go. If you had the policing aspect
it so
of it and then they got down to just one or two companies that were doing something, you'd lose your options and freedom that way. And then maybe you wouldn't have to put as much engineering to be the best. Like, it's just a snowballing effect.
Oh, so, it is. I think Herbert would get bored. You know, he needs projects. You know, that's what he lives for, is to push the guys to do something different and to do it better. With our wiring harnesses, he wasn't happy with the sleeve that we were using because it's this, what were the manufacturers using, that, you know, that corrugated plastic stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That just disintegrates over time. Mice I lost like count it. Of the amount of samples of product that I got, and I literally couldn't see straight anymore, like silicon sleeve, different sleeve. Yeah. What is the difference between this one? And you physically go through and touch and feel and stretch and try and set things on fire. Yeah. And I guess it's there's a fine line between wanting to be in something for just the profit or loving what you do.
Yeah,
right. No, I
hope you can get there and do them both.
That almost kind of leads into the last question we ask every one of our guests.
Yeah.
which we prepped you with, whether you hit it or not. Nope, she's looking at all the notes.
Oh, it says it's cocktail hour. Okay, cool.
There we go.
Yep, she's smart. She's got this all figured out.
It is.
We'll give you time to think about it.
Okay.
But most of the time we say that, and then the guest listens to me talking anyway, and they're like, oh, crap, I did have to answer the question. So we ask everybody, what does success look like to you?
That's easy. Happy customers.
Okay. That was easy.
Happy customers.
That was great.
And that is.
And it's happy for a lot of reasons.
It is. I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for a long time here in the U.S. now, and I still love when I go on a road trip, you know, you'll send a farmer a message, and he'll be like, well, just a mile down here, and you'll see this on your left-hand side, and then you'll take a right near, and then you'll see me in the field, and you're like, oh, crap, I hope I can find him. And you get there, and you get on the machine, and you spend half an hour or an hour just riding in the field, and you have a chat about everything from commodity prices to, right, hey, where should I go for a vacation in Europe, yep, or whatever. I take such great joy in this. And for me, that's a really nice thing to be able to do. And people still find it very weird. You know, we have customers where if Herbert and I do a road trip together and they'll be like, what's your name? And he'll be like, Herbert. Like, oh, are you related to the man, like, who owns the company? And he's like, sort of, you know. And then the customer's like, you know, Herbert will get out and he'll be like, hey, that's the guy. He owns the, like, he was in my combine, yeah, or he was on my tractor. Right. And it's, you know, for me, that's such a nice thing to do because, right, it's a rarity now within business because everyone's like, go, 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 more money, more money. Sell more, and at the end of the day, if I can't be connected to the people who spend money, on the product. I spoke to a customer from Iowa near Sioux Falls last week, and he's like, oh, I remember, you're the Australian girl. You were out here with my dad on the combine. I'm cool. Like, oh, okay.
All right. I can but be the Australian
you
girl.
Don't, when you meet an Aussie, you don't forget it because we don't get to meet very many of them. So.
Well, yeah, we're all related.
Yeah. I did the typical cliche American thing because Uppy was here, right, when you were going to the bathroom. I was like, oh, did you see Uppy? Do you know him? She's like, no, we don't know everyone.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, I mean, he is like on social media. I didn't know if you just...
That's funny.
It's like maybe 3 degrees of separation, yeah, in the farming industry. Yeah. You'll know somebody who knows somebody,
yeah,
and then you know each other. You're like, oh yeah, that's right.
That's good.
I know. That for me is success at the end of the day. Is, you know, that's why I love the Farm Machinery Show. I love coming here because, you know, you just get customers that come on in and go, hey, so, you know, thanks so much, or, you know, thanks so much. I bought a lower horsepower tractor and I put the module on. I saved myself a bunch of money. And it works great. And this is a nice thing. This is what it should be about.
Yeah. Very cool. That's a good answer.
Do you guys sell product here? Like at the show?
We mostly work through a dealer network.
Okay.
So we do have a show special. And yeah, we have different dealers that come and help us out on the booth. So we do run a show special. But in order for the show special, you need to physically come to the booth.
Right.
Give us your details. Yeah. It's not just a dial it in thing.
Yep.
We like that.
Well, if you're listening to this like 3 weeks from now, you might have to call them and like really butter them up.
Get a ticket to Commodity Classic.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. We will be at Commodity Classic.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
This is good. Well, I'm going to do a little summary here, and then we'll get ready to send our listeners out. We thank you so much for hanging out with us.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
We had Sherry here, the power behind the Power Chip Company. Herbert's going to love that, isn't he?
Yeah. I'm not going to. That's going to take a while to lift that down.
That's funny.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Steinbauer Power Chips. So, having them here to give us some background information around how tuning your engine could affect the profitability of your farm. We talked a lot about how it has cost savings measures. It could also be time saving, which obviously relates to cost. Could potentially improve efficiency on your farm. Obviously, that relates to cost as well. We know there are multiple ways to tune an engine or different products that are offered. We know that those are ever-changing. We know that we can put them on anything that has a diesel motor to an extent. We even learned about EVs. So if we do have car listeners, car guys, we can get some more information on that side of things. We know that about 2002, 2004-ish,
is as far back as we're looking.
Yep.
And dependent upon, just has to be electronic, correct?
Yep.
And we know that there are limitations to how much horsepower you can gain. Mm-hmm. And that's why you call in the experts like the folks at Steinbauer.
Yes.
Ultimately, most excited for a company like this because you're ever evolving. And that's probably something that we should look at when you're getting ready to start a company or select a company to work with. Steinbauer certainly puts a lot of research and innovation to keep you and your engine safe throughout that process. So really a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Do you think I missed anything, Corey?
One thing that we maybe missed, you said you worked with dealer networks. Mm-hmm. Like if someone does want to buy the product, is it best just to go online or where do we find them?
Generally, the best is most people will give us a call, and then we can put you in contact with the dealer, because some of our dealers are John Deere people, or some of our dealers are Case people, and that's what they specialize with. So we try and match you with somebody who suits your needs.
Yep.
And a lot of our dealers will come for technical training sessions. So we have some dealers where if a customer really, they don't want to install the product themselves, they want a dealer to come out and do that for them. We have some dealers that do offer that service. So being based out of Michigan, we're in Dowagiac, which no one knows where that is, but it's in southwest Michigan. And it's people can always stop in. We get customers that do call in and see us. We always welcome people to stop in and give us a call if you have any questions.
Right.
Please just call. We can put you in contact with a dealer. 269-230-0400.
I like that. That's really, really good.
I like that phone number. Do you know how long it took me to get a good phone number?
ours isn't good either. We just ended up with one, and you say it enough times to where you can get it to be repetitive. But, Corey, what's a challenge you have for our listeners?
My challenge is, with the scarcity of equipment and tractors, and what we've seen is, look, instead of maybe buying new, maybe you don't have to. Right? Maybe you could save hundreds of thousands of dollars by not having to need that. Look into Steinbauer.
Right.
It could get you to that next level of horsepower that you need for that implement you just bought.
Yeah. Great.
Safely. We can get you there safely.
Safely. I love this. Listeners, this has been fun. Thank you for hanging out with us. Sherry, again, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
For taking part of your afternoon here at the National Farm Machinery Show. But listeners, until next show, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.